You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast on this Friday, June 29th, 2018. I am your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. As always, if you enjoy this show, subscribe to it on either iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. It's been a while since we last chatted. Of course, we're in the summer, so we're not doing shows as frequently, but I did want to check in this week and do a mailbag show. We've got a lot of good questions listeners posted on gangrenenation.com, so let's jump in. We'll get to as many of them as we can. Our first question, what's the likelihood the Jets can land a pass rusher? Not since the 2000s have the Jets hit on a pass rusher, Sean Ellis and John Abraham. Is the best case scenario hoping that the Jets can package Teddy Bridgewater with some magic to land Dante Fowler from Jacksonville, or do you cross your fingers and hope that the edge rusher will be the best player available in the 2019 draft class first round? Never seems like an elite edge rusher ever hits the free agent market. Either way, showcasing Bridgewater might be the best bet to make some moves at this point for positioning and options alone. I don't think that the Jets are going to trade Teddy Bridgewater for Dante Fowler. I'm not sure that Jacksonville's trading Dante Fowler. I mean, if you read what Tom Coughlin had to say at the point, so I think the reason people think Dante Fowler is available is Jacksonville declined their fifth-year option on him. You get a fifth-year team option for every first-round pick, and Jacksonville did not pick his up. But if you read what Tom Coughlin had to say at the time, they like Fowler. It's not that they dislike Fowler. It's just the fifth-year option for an edge rusher picked in the top 10 is pretty high. It's not really a big discount, and Fowler hasn't really justified. You can be a good player and not justify that kind of price tag. So I'm not sure Jacksonville's going to trade him, and I certainly don't think they're going to trade him for Teddy Bridgewater, because they had a chance to sign Teddy. If they wanted Teddy Bridgewater, they could have made a move for him when Bridgewater was a free agent, and they didn't do it. I think if the Jets are going to trade Bridgewater, it'll be to a team that maybe suffers an injury at quarterback. That would be my guess, because again, something would have to change in your quarterback situation for you to have not gone after Bridgewater back in March and want him suddenly during the summer. So I don't think that's going to happen. I think you have to get your edge rushers through the draft. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to do it in most cases. I mean, as you said, good edge rushers never hit the open market because they're just that valuable. So I think the Jets are going to have to find an edge rusher in the draft. And part of the issue, I think, might be just that they haven't prioritized the position as much as they should have, through the year since that Ellis Abraham draft. And it's not, I'm not knocking Mike Maccagnan here. I think this goes back. This is a story over multiple GMs. So, I do think it's going to have to be in the draft. I don't think the Jets are going to be able to package Teddy Bridgewater. If they can do it, it would be great. But I'm not convinced that they're going to be able to do that. I think any team trading for Teddy Bridgewater is probably going to want to give up a draft pick. I'm not sure. When we're talking about the off season, we're past the point where a team would be able to replace an edge rusher that they traded for Bridgewater. So I'm not sure they're going to want to take players off their 2018 roster in order to land Bridgewater. I think it probably would be a draft pick, because you're not going to be able to replace a player that you trade. Even if you want Teddy Bridgewater, you're not going to be able to replace that player on your roster in 2018. You're not going to be able to fill his role. So I think it'll probably be the draft where the Jets will have to find an edge rusher. Next question. Why do we call a player disloyal to the Jets when they hold out or leave in free agency, but we never call the Jets disloyal for cutting a player in the middle of his contract? That's a great point. It's something I argue quite a bit. I think the reason for it is that people view things through the team's perspective. People want the team to be good. They don't really care about the individual player, but that's a key point right there is, players, it's why you should never call a player disloyal. It's why you should never get upset with a player for doing what makes sense for him financially. I mean, these players are literally taking years off their lives to play this game, and they're doing it for a financial reward. They're trying to set themselves up and their families for life. So you can't get upset with a player when he's seeking a big contract, because teams, the second the guy stops producing, they cut him. And in the NFL, contracts aren't even guaranteed. So the second you get cut, that's your earning power is gone. So you should never talk. I think loyalty is something that I don't understand why anybody would expect a player to be loyal, because teams certainly aren't loyal to players. You know, the second you stop producing, you're gone and you stop making money. So if I was a player, I'd try to make as much money as I could as quickly as I could. Next question. What quarter of the season does Darnold get the keys to the car? Who leads the Jets in passing? So I think Darnold will have the keys to the car. And if you're asking, and this is just purely a guess because it depends on where Darnold is, but the one thing I do feel pretty confident in saying is that the Jets would love to get him on the field as quickly as possible. I think that's a pretty safe bet. So my guess is that it'll be early. My guess would probably be first or second quarter of the season. I wouldn't be shocked to see him start week one. If he shows he's ready, I mean, there's not going to be any reason to keep him off the field. You know, it's the second he's ready. Now, if he's not ready, you don't throw him in, because you do have veteran options. You do have veteran alternatives, which was something you didn't have in 2013 when you had Geno Smith breaking him in. It was something you did not have in 2009 when you had Mark Sanchez. So the Jets have set themselves up a little bit better with Darnold than they have with their last couple high quarterback draft picks. But I think it'll be early. I think Darnold does lead the team in passing at the end of the day. I think the scenarios where Bridgewater was with the Jets was gonna be a player with the Jets have passed. I'm not sure I wouldn't be shocked if Bridgewater ended up producing for the Jets this year, but Bridgewater is obviously not a long term player with this team. So I think the focus is gonna be getting Darnold on the field. I think I've always liked Teddy Bridgewater, and I think he'll go somewhere else and have a chance to be very successful. It's probably not going to be here. But I think that the Jets are going to want to get Darnold on the field, and I don't think McCown's going to play well enough to stay on the field for 16 games if it's McCown. So my guess would be Darnold will lead the team in passing. I would guess, if you're asking me, let's say the second quarter of the season. I think McCown probably starts week one, but I wouldn't be shocked if it was Darnold, but I think Darnold's on the field at some point, maybe second quarter of the season. Next question. I asked this a couple weeks ago, but it was too late to be included in the podcast, so I'm trying it again. Do you think the Jets realize that for at least half of every preseason game, either their starting quarterback, a quarterback coming from a nearly career-ending injury, or their potential savior rookie quarterback is going to be lining up behind second-string and third-string offensive linemen on a team with mediocre at best starting offensive linemen? How are the Jets going to protect these significant assets during the preseason while also seeing how they are progressing, primarily Teddy and Sam? Well, thank you for your persistence. I appreciate that you asking again. That's not a terrible point. I understand what you're saying, and I do think that they'll probably play the starting offensive lineman deeper into preseason games than you typically would see. But it's not like the Jets are the first team that ever have had this situation where you're going to be putting one of your quarterbacks behind your second, third string offensive lineman. Ultimately, so I guess that's where I come from. It's not like the Jets are the only team with more than one quarterback that that's ever had to go out there behind a backup offensive line. And look, if you know what you're doing back there, that can help at least to some extent minimize the risk. You got to put these guys out there. I mean, ultimately, you have to put those guys out there, and you know, you also have to give the backup offensive lineman a chance to display their skills. So yeah, I understand the point and maybe a little worried, but you know, ultimately you have to do it. You also can't put the starting offensive lineman out there for four quarters. Now I think you'll probably see them extend their playing time a little bit longer, maybe an extra series or two. But I just don't think you can't be afraid that a guy's going to go out there and get hurt. You know, one of my viewpoints is that, you know, the game of football is a physical game, and if you're afraid you're going to get a guy hurt, what's the point of even putting a guy on the field? You ultimately have to give all the players on the roster, you have to ultimately have to give all 90 guys a chance to showcase their skills, and that includes the backup offensive linemen. So I understand the argument. It's not a, and again, it's, I think it's a decent point, but I think ultimately you have to trust the guys that you have on the roster to be able to go out there and perform. Next question. What will make the 2018 season considered a success? The Jets are in year two of a full rebuild, so I feel like playoff as a goal is still wishful thinking. How should our success be measured this year? 7 wins, Darnold starting 8 games and looking somewhat competent, defense returning to 2009 form. You know, I guess what I would probably put, I think if we're just talking wins, and I'm not sure it's totally about wins or losses, I think the Jets have to get at least 6 wins. I don't think the Jets can have a third straight season with 5 wins or less, so I think you at least need to see some progress. Because ultimately, you know, you talk about rebuilding, the most important part of rebuilding is building and showing progress and showing that you're moving forward. So I think it would be very difficult to say a season with 5 wins or less is a successful year for the Jets, because that's what they did last year. It's what they did the year before. You have to start showing some degree of progress here, especially when you've made some additions that you think, you know, they weren't huge spenders in free agency, but they added enough additions where you'd say, man, you know, a team that brought in this many guys, you'd think they'd be better. You'd hope they'd be better. And then the quarterback, you know, you bring in the young quarterback. And people always like to divorce the quarterback's progress from the way the team performs. People always say, well, I'd rather the young quarterback play great and the team be bad than vice versa. But the young quarterback's play has something to do with the team's performance. Now, not completely. You know, I'm not sure Darnold's, I think you raise a good point that Darnold's performance, no matter how good it is, might not be enough to lift the Jets to the playoffs. So I'd say, you know, 6 wins and Darnold looking like he's the real deal, I think that's the way I would judge the season. I think those are my two benchmarks right there. And I think Darnold's a really important part of that equation. Next question. If Darnold has a successful rookie year, but the Jets win 5 or less, does Maccagnan and Bowles both get axed, or Bowles only? And that's, I guess that goes back to what I was just saying, is if Darnold has a successful rookie season, I'd hope the Jets win more than 5 games. I think that Bowles is a guarantee. I think Bowles, if the Jets win 5 or less, I don't see Bowles coming back for 2019. See, I don't think it's a playoffs or bust year for Bowles. But that doesn't mean he can just survive anything. I think the team does have to show some progress. I think it has to get at least 6 wins. And, I think we're on the same page when we're talking 5 or less, because as I just said, I think 6 is the benchmark. I think it probably would be Bowles only. I think Maccagnan would get another shot because of the quarterback. I think they both should go. What should happen? I think they both should go if it's 5 or less wins, because ultimately, I think if the Jets win 5 or less games, part of the story is going to be the deep holes they have at certain positions. It'll probably be maybe, you know, the premium positions. It may be lack of an edge rusher. It'll be maybe the cornerback. The corners are not producing the way they should. It might be that Darnold's not showing what you were hoping he would give you as a rookie. So, you know, and you've had 4 years to fill those holes. So I think both should go. My guess is that, and again, it's just a guess, my guess is Bowles would be the only guy who will go. Our next question, Sean Ellis or Mo Wilkerson? I'd go with Ellis. I think when these two guys were both playing their best, Wilkerson was the better player. You know, Wilkerson was one of the top defensive linemen in the league, but I'll give you Ellis for 2 reasons. It's first of all, longevity. As Ellis did it for over a decade with this team. So you have the longevity, whereas Wilkerson's period of success was far less sustained. But second is just Ellis brought it. You know, Ellis brought it every week. You know, Ellis got a new contract. He didn't let up. And for me, that's important. It's important that you show up every week. You know, there's nothing I think is more, there's no greater flaw I think a player can have than just lack of desire. And I think we saw that in Wilkerson, a guy who mailed in performances. You know, every year you see a team draft some guy in the fifth or sixth round, and they say, well, that guy's got so much talent. The question is just if they can just keep get him motivated. Motivation is literally the last thing I think you can teach anybody. I don't think you can teach a guy to be motivated. Guy's either motivated, he's going to bring it every week, or he's not. You can have all the talent in the world, and look at Wilkerson, look at Quinton Coples, you look at guys like that. You can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have motivation, you're not going to be a good player. And I don't, you know, you got to, and I think a lot of that has to come from yourself. You know, you can't ask other people to motivate you. So I think that I'd go with Sean Ellis. And I think if we're talking just in terms of who was the better Jet, that's what I'd say. Alternate universe, you're the Jets quarterbacks coach. You're given the power to give Darnold one thing to work on during this break before training camp. What do you choose? Well, I think it's working under center. He really did not work under center much in college. And look, the NFL is a shotgun league, so it's not as big of a deal as it used to be. It's probably not as big a deal as a lot of scouts make it out to be, but there are going to be situations where he's going to have to work under center, and there's going to be an adjustment period. He's going to have to get comfortable doing that with the footwork, all the technical stuff that comes with that. So I think that's pretty much the big thing I'd be looking for. Next question, 98 or 2010? So I guess the question is which Jets team was better, the 1998 team or the 2010 team? I'd go with 98, and I think a lot of it comes down to the quarterback position where you have Testaverde over Mark Sanchez. Once Testaverde got inserted into the lineup for Glenn Foley, that Jets team really kind of turned into a machine. You know, they were a team that was very difficult to stop, and I think the Vinny era gets a little overly romanticized, because if you look past 98, he really was not that good. 98 was really the only successful year he had. I mean, 99, he, of course, suffered the devastating injury week one against the Patriots, so that never got going. 2000, he killed the team with interceptions. He narrowly missed the playoffs. 01, they made the playoffs, but you know, he wasn't that great. He just was not a fit for the West Coast offense the Jets were running. 02, he got benched for Pennington. 03, he started the year in place of an injured Pennington, and results were not that great again. And then 05, he came back after Pennington's injury, and again, results were not that great. But 98, he was head and shoulders above of where Mark Sanchez was in 2010. You know, I think in both situations, you had excellent defenses, you had excellent run games. In 2010, you had the offensive line doing a lot of the work. In 98, you had Curtis Martin. And I think, you know, I think just in terms of coaching, you look at that 98 staff, it's incredible the guys they had on that coaching staff. And I know a lot of these guys did not go on to have success as head coaches, but just the fact that that many guys got hired as head coaches shows you what you had on that staff, because you only get hired as a head coach if you're a really good assistant. So you had Bill Belichick as an assistant, you had Charlie Weiss as an assistant, you had Romeo Crennel. Yeah, you had Eric Mangini, who obviously was not the greatest coach in the world. But again, if you get hired as a head coach, it means people thought you were pretty good as an assistant. You had Romeo Crennel. It's incredible how many future head coaches were on that staff during the Parcells era. And of course, you had Parcells. You were coached by a guy who's in the Hall of Fame, a guy who was, you know, one of the great coaches of his era. So just incredible coaching staff that year. And not to take away, I think the coaching staff did a good job with the Jets in 2010, but you know, they were not on the level of what you had in 98. So I think, you know, those would be the big differences. I think the first of all, you'd have the quarterback situation was head and shoulders above 2010 and what you had in 98. And then I think, you know, the coaching staff is just, you know, I think you take and then no disrespect to Rex Ryan, but Bill Parcells was ahead of him. And then, you know, you had future head coaches up and down the roster, up and down the staff. So I think you'd have to go with the 98 team. That'll do it for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe to it on iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Hope you have a great weekend. Hope you enjoy your holiday. We'll be back next week to talk more Jets.